Up next from the MySQL conference, Brian Aker gives a blunt and sometimes humorous comparison of the pros and cons of the so-called NoSQL data stores and the more traditional MySQL and relational databases from IT Conversations.
Everything begins with a story. And in the beginning, really came for me on this particular trek with this particular project, began with the 5-0 Customer Advisory Board. And so it actually began at this conference a number of years ago. And the story began like this. We're in a room, and this is filled with the MySQL customers who, for the most part, are trying to direct where MySQL is going. At the time, the room has got placed people like in it for like Google and Facebook and Yahoo, and all of these people here telling us like, okay, this is what we'd like to see. So this is a really important meeting we have every year where we take a lot of input in. And this particular year, we're presenting 5.0. And so we're talking about stored procedures, we're talking about triggers, we're talking about views. And we went through this entire long presentation explaining what these features were and how they were going to benefit from them. And I noticed at the end of the talk, the customers were kind of silent. And people were not really looking or paying attention to us or really all that interested. So I asked the question, how many of you all are interested in this current set of features and this current direction that we're taking the database? And about half the room raised their hands. And the half the room that raised their hands were the OEMs. And the OEMs were what? These are people who are taking MySQL, including it with their product, mainly to be, well, a cheap replacement for Oracle. They didn't really care about the direction so much. What they cared about was, could they have in a batteries-included replacement of the database that they had been paying a lot of money for? And the folks who had actually been pushing our innovation, you know, I started asking them, and they were like, well, we don't really care about these features. We don't use these features. What we need, and they started listing off things, we need you to actually integrate better. We need more replication. We need all of these pieces of the puzzle. And this is the stuff that we really need. And so from that, I started to write down notes and started talking to customers and saying, well, what would you like to see us do? And so from that, I kind of started this whole journey to find out, like, what should we be doing? What should we have been doing? And so I started figuring out a few things. One thing is we actually were needing to work on a problem. And the problem was the problems in the future. We needed to leap forward in our technology. We needed to start worrying about multi-core. We needed to start worrying about, you know, larger expanses of memory. This was something else. Further, we actually need to be easier to use. And this isn't so much of MySQL was always simple to just start up, get it running. You know, that's always been very simple. Ease of use is one of the major reasons why MySQL came about. But ease of use also started becoming another problem. That problem is we have tens to hundreds of MySQL servers sitting out here. So what are we going to do about that? How do we make this stuff much easier to use? The other thing that made me very, very aware was where were we going to focus? We need to actually focus on what our customer problems were. We need to focus on the web. We needed to solve problems that they were actually having at this point. Because when we started looking at the market, it became obvious. We looked at the embedded world. What database is used in the embedded world? It's SQLite. SQLite has completely been, it has went through the database world. It's on device after device. Everybody here who has one of these nice shiny iPads, your iPhones, all that, SQLite is the database that has become ubiquitous inside the embedded world. For us to continue focusing on this, that's not exactly a good plan. The other thing that I came across was what else did we actually need? Well, at the time we were doing a lot of work for SAP, and SAP was interesting because they had this old product called R3, and R3 is this large ERP application. It was all built around how databases were designed, you know, in the 90s. And so as we tried to focus MySQL on that, we lost a lot of our functionality and a lot of flexibility and a lot of our vision towards what people were interested in, what actually drove them to MySQL. Now, this in itself was an interesting technical problem for me. But a technical problem alone is really not worth solving, personally, I believe. You want to find something else that really makes something interesting. And the part of it then that really interested me was when I was talking to users, they started explaining to me all their frustrations around MySQL, and all their frustrations had to go back with, we don't see you as actually being open source anymore. We can't contribute patches. You want us to sign long forms. You want us to do all this stuff, which is unnatural. This is stuff we don't have to do in generally open source projects. We want you to actually try to function in an open source model. And so when you brought the social aspect and the technical aspect, suddenly this became a lot more interesting to me personally. So in focusing on tomorrow, so when I started working on Drizzle about 2 years ago, at the time, what was actually the questions? Well, I said, well, let's focus on the future. One thing, the world's going to be 64-bit. When I would raise, you know, when I asked people back then, how many of you all still have 32-bit servers out in production? Good chunk, about half the room would generally raise their hand. When I asked that question today, the answer is zero. Today, what did we focus on when we worked on with Drizzle? We focused on 64-bit solutions. We removed all of the 32-bit hacks, stuff to make smaller platforms work on that. Can we still run on it? Sure. Does it really matter? No, because what is your laptops? What are your servers today? They're all 64-bit. And all that code that existed in the database to try to make stuff work on 32-bit environments was just more code for developers to have to learn. It was just more baggage that we were carrying on. What else did we look at? We started looking at what is disk going to look like. This is one of the things we're looking at very closely today. SSD. In 2 years, SSD is going to be the most common disk. It's already in my laptop. It's in a number of your all's laptops. This is going to be throughout the server environment. You know, someone comes to me today and they say, you know, hey, we're going to go spend a bunch of money on consulting. And, you know, this company has said, you know, they come in, it's going to be about $3,000, $10,000. And I said, just out of curiosity, have you decided to spend, say, $500 and buy some SSDs for your couple of servers? $1,000? What was your performance gain there? It's excellent. That's going to be the common case going forward now everywhere. And so we focus a lot on that. So when we started looking at the problem of how are we going to create a new MySQL, let's actually focus our new MySQL, our Drizzle, on actually this problem. Let's look at SSDs. No new more locks. The world is multi-core. When we first started talking about this stuff, you know, we had people who had four-core boxes, and MySQL performed kind of poorly in that. MySQL performs pretty poorly when you go beyond four-core. And we started asking ourselves, what do we need to do? We need to actually remove locks. We don't need to actually try to make locking a little bit better. We don't need to try to partition off our locking systems. What we need to do is go in and solve the problem. Move to lockless designs. Get rid of locks. Because we know that while today you can kind of get around locks a little bit because maybe you have an 8-core system, maybe you have a 16-core system, maybe you have 24-core systems on the way. We know that right now focusing on where we need to be focusing on where the future is. And the future has many, many cores. And many, many core systems mean what? No new locks. Other things, we need to focus on where how modern applications were built. You know, people don't use stored procedures in the way that they've used them in the 90s. Let's see how people actually execute SQL today, and let's function based on that. And the other thing we looked at was, well, when MySQL was, you know, created from Unireg a decade ago, C++ was not exactly the most advanced language at the time. There was a lot of things that we would question, and things like, well, you don't want to do that in C++ because it's not fully baked. And, you know, the thing that we have found in the last 2 years of working on Drizzle is what? C++ is fully baked. And also, what is college students learning? If they learn anything, what? They're learning object-oriented programming. So we said, okay, let's go back. We're going to actually go from C++ to be actually using C++. We're going to go back and examine the STL. We're going to examine Boost. We're going to examine these libraries. And when we find that they're good, we're going to use them. Because here's the thing. All of these libraries are part of a larger open source community. And there are more people who examine these libraries. One of the problems of eliminating bugs and is really how do we actually get more eyeballs viewing code? How do we get and leverage larger audiences? So what we decided to go back in when we started working on Drizzle is how do we go take what other people are using, reuse it ourselves, find the best pieces out there, and then what? Make use of that, encourage other people to actually use that stuff. So Drizzle today is C++, it uses STL, and even recently we started using Boost. The other thing was we wanted to make things further easier to use. And in this regards, both from the standpoint of how deployment works to actually how does somebody go about using the database. We have one blob type. There is no tiny blob, medium blob, papa blob, mama blob, whatever else that exists. There is just a single blob. We know the fact that there is what? Blob in MySQL can use up what? Between 1 to 4 bytes in memory? A blob is many, many megs. Why are we wasting all this code time trying to figure out 1 to 4 bytes on the front end of a header when the blob is what? Megabytes in size. The additional memory, it is irrelevant to these problems. All it does is add to code bloat. What does it do? It makes developers sit around and think, well, should we have optimized by using a tiny blob over a medium blob? When in the truth, what's happening inside of NODB? It actually has one blob type. No 3-byte integers. This is a famous one. People goes off, use medium int. They're like, well, we saved everything by using a 3-byte integer. And then suddenly their application space runs out of numbers. And what? The comparison, moving this stuff back and forth between this, I remember when I talked to the Intel people a while ago, and they were like, that 3-byte integer, you know we actually never built a processor that can really work with those things, right? That's something we never actually did. Like, yeah, we're quite aware of that. No 3-byte integers. Take the types that are actually used, make those the types that people are actually using. Make things simpler to use. Also, let's just solve really stupid problems. The web is UTF-8. I go and I talk to somebody, and they're like, yes, I built this great web application. We put up this form. And all these people from India and China have been entering the data into it. And I'm like, yeah, do you read Chinese or Hindi or anything? And they're like, no. Have you ever tried to display the data? No. Do you know that your table's probably sorting on Swedish? And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah. That data that's been inserted is probably actually all corrupted, or maybe working. Let's remove this stuff. The web is UTF-8 at this point. Let's just insert data into the database UTF-8. If you need something else, we have binary data store. But the truth is, if you're inserting data from the web nowadays, what are you doing? You're inserting UTF-8 data. Let's make this stuff the default. Let's not actually screw developers who are sitting there who may not know, by the way, this one particular detail. No gotchas. So this is one of probably my earliest annoyances with MySQL. And I've worked with MySQL since about 1998. No bad record inserts. In Drizzle, if you have an enum that is yes and no, and you insert the word pig, we don't insert a null or some kind of empty space or whatever else. We throw an error. If you insert some kind of, thank you. Hey, I don't know how many times people have gone like, I've given this talk in audiences and they were like, hold it. You mean it would actually insert the word a null, and they'll go back to their applications. People don't even realize this. They're inserting data, and the record in their data is becoming corrupted. We've gotten rid of all that stuff. We've gotten rid of hidden truncations. There is none of this like, well, we copied the data onto a system which was file system case sensitive, and then we moved our data over from not, and then suddenly none of this stuff actually happens. We have real data dictionaries nowadays. We actually store stuff properly. There is no file system case sensitives. There is no modes. There is no, hey, we actually want to enable February 31st as a date. You don't need a mode that enables February 31st as a date. It's a bug. You don't actually need to do things like, well, do we need to do ANSI compatibility or do we need this compatibility? All of this stuff just complicates your application. And it complicates your setups because what happens? You go to deploy your servers, one configuration file is wrong, and the next thing you know, all of your data is incorrect. No modes. Other thing we did, we looked at Drizzle and we said, how do we make Drizzle infrastructure aware? When we talk about databases, for some reason, people have this concept that they're an island in the middle of their data center. Databases shouldn't be an island in the middle of your data center. Databases are another cog in your infrastructure. They are another piece of the infrastructure. Inside of Drizzle, what have we done? We've moved authentication and authorization out. We've tried to take things and actually make it so that when you install Drizzle, Drizzle is a part of your environment. Not an island unto itself, but an actual part of the infrastructure that it fits in. And this is when we get into what is ease of use. We look at Drizzle as a part of the infrastructure. The last piece on this is organic open source. I am a big believer in open source, and I am also a very big believer in doing it organically. And what do I mean by organically? That means that in our worlds, everything is public. We have complete transparency. There is no version of Drizzle sitting out there that has 3 or 4 features that someday we might provide back to the community under some license or in some of the cases. Drizzle is entirely open source. Release early, release often. Every 2 weeks, we release a new version of Drizzle. That's it. Every 2 weeks, we drop a new release of Drizzle. We do this by what? We keep our trees green. We keep everything working. We actually make sure that testing is ongoing. Every 2 weeks, we drop a release of Drizzle. There is no last-minute dashes. There's no nothing. It works. Every 2 weeks, we take Drizzle and we release it. How do we do all this? We use things like Launchpad. We put all of our source code up publicly. There is no secret source code to Drizzle that's going to have the extra special feature of whatever, anything. It's all sitting up on Launchpad. If you want to see what people are working on, you can go to Launchpad. You can look at see the some 200 open trees right now where people are working on different projects. Everything is open source. And here's the last piece that's pretty important to me. There is no Drizzle Incorporated. We're not doing this the same way this time. What are we trying to do? We are trying to do the same thing, the part of it made successful for Linux. What do? We have an open code base. We allow people to fork it. We encourage people to build products around it. We encourage people to build databases around it. What do we function on? We function on the concept that there will actually be rising water. More people use the code base, many people will rise, many people will reinvest in what we are actually doing. This is something that's been very, very important because we do not want to create a company, once again, where there isn't any kind of a stranglehold over any kind of innovation. We want to encourage innovation. If 5 years from now somebody comes along and forks Drizzle, and Drizzle it comes and becomes this entirely new entity based on what their vision and what their views are, that means success for us. The world now, it's funny, open source projects are really scared. We see things like GitHub existing and like Launchpad. Now, you know, recently our developers, well, we don't know if source code's coming back anymore. And really, you know, that's not the fearful thing. Fearful thing would be is if no innovation was occurring. This is important to me. There is no Drizzle Incorporated. There's not going to be. There are many of us who are actually going to provide services around it, and there's many of companies that are working with us. But there is going to be no central company. Everything is based on community. So when we look at all of this, what is all this really adding up to? This gets into the world of where we start talking about what is a modern infrastructure. Modern infrastructures have multiple clients. We have routing proxies. We need to be able to do cache things inside of routing proxies. We need to do things like be able to support SQL and REST. You know, the term NoSQL is not one of my personal favorites. Here's a better term, also SQL. We need multiple interfaces. We need to be able to speak to databases, not only in SQL, but in other languages and other environments as well. So in our world, this is that environment. We look at this. We need to be able to handle multiple parsers, maybe multiple optimizers, storage routing, a single node database. It's useful. There's so many people who actually need this. A lot of data sets, around 20 gigs to a terabyte. That all fits on a single machine. That's awesome. But in large infrastructure, what do they need? They have big, giant, what, SANs. We have NAS devices. We have all this storage arrays sitting out there. So we need to actually build a database such they can actually handle a world where storage is just another part of the stack with inside the database. So in the Drizzle world, you see the green lines? That's Drizzle. We talk about this, and it was something someone pointed out to me when they were initially looking at the slide. What exactly is Drizzle? Drizzle is not, you know, necessarily one particular dialect, one particular protocol, not one particular piece of the optimizer. What is Drizzle? Drizzle is actually the glue, the pieces that tie all of these components together. That is what Drizzle is. Drizzle is that processor that actually handles that. Our kernel basically represents how do you plug in pieces. And our plug-in interfaces today, these are a few of them. Today, we can plug in our replication system. Our replication system, entirely pluggable. You want to pop anyone in? That's fine. Storage engines. We've continued with the ability to actually plug in multiple storage engines. Because when I talk about data routing, storage in the infrastructure, in the enterprise, let's face it, that's going to become a whole lot more interesting in the next few coming years. We can do logging. Logging was beautiful. I put up the logging API, and about 30 minutes later, I get a request from a push from somebody who had done what? Syslog. They're like, you know what? Error logging. Going to a flat file, going into a table, not useful for us. What do? We use syslog. It was not useful for them to actually put stuff in this out-of-the-way place that they're going to have to then scavenge. You know, I talked to so many monitoring companies, and what are they doing? They're sitting there trying to, like, dig data out of their data, you know, out of these databases and go off these machines. Screw that. That's not modern. Let's actually put APIs up, connect to those APIs, send data there. Authentication, authorization, table functions we do nowadays, regular functions we do. By using regular functions, we can actually do things like implement pieces into, say, Gehrman. So we can actually do MapReduce pieces directly out of the database, the kind of stuff that we see Greenplum and AstroData and other people actually doing. Protocol. We need to be able to support multiple protocols. Query rewriting. Come on, web servers have had this ability since the very beginning to rewrite queries. We've now been able to do this for about the last 5 or 6 months. This stuff, we should have done this a long time ago. We can actually do things now, pluggable interfaces around XA. Replication has been one of the big pieces that people have asked. So what do we need to be able to do in replication? So in our environment, we have created a replication system. What have we focused on? We have focused on geographical replication. We have focused on how to get your data safely, completely, to another system so you can do backups, for whatever once you want to do. So how do we do this? A while ago, when we first started up a project, Google released Google Protobuffers, and it's a serialization method. And what's really, really, really awesome about this is that it works with Perl, Python, it works with PHP, it works with C++, it works with Java. So let's create a message format. There should be no MySQL bin log tool where you go and you try to read some files off a disk. That's not the answer. The answer is you put it in a standard API that many people are actually working on so that anybody can take our replication stream. The first time we had a replication stream going, you know, I peeled the file off in Python and in about 30 minutes wrote a little replicator. It's so funny to be able to say, well, you know, we spend years working on replication, and the most basic form of replicator, Python script, 30 minutes, really not that hard. We actually replicate the row transformations themselves. So there is no, hey, well, we had a time zone on this box, but the time zone might have been off on this box. It removes that whole question you used to have to ask of, well, is your replication deterministic or not? The person who's writing the application should not have to be concerned of, did we write a deterministic application? Is it going to reproduce the same results each time? That is a flaw in logic. Worked really nicely in the beginning because it was really nice and fast. What happens? You start to scale out, you find data corruption issues, just doesn't work. Other things we do, we actually immediately, by having these APIs, we've had people be able to integrate today with RabbitMQ, Cassandra, Memcached, Gehrman, these systems. We don't only need to replicate into databases. There's all kinds of systems. When we think about SQL-based databases, we don't need to replicate into them. There's even a tree to go up to get into Postgres. All of this stuff, it should be completely open. In the environment of the enterprise, you have an infrastructure. You have a bus already. Let's actually send data out onto that. Other things we've done, we implemented libdrizzle. Supports Drizzle, supports MySQL, supports SQLite. It's asynchronous. What else is it? It's BSD licensed. I never want to have another conversation again on the issue of, is the protocol GPL? How does actually my application link with this stuff? I absolutely hate those conversations. I am not interested in them. Let's just make the whole thing BSD and end the conversation. You can link to Drizzle. That's awesome. Move on. Authentication, authorization. It is no cost to do in our environment. If you don't install a plugin for this, there is no cost. There is no three or four lock systems you go through. If you're somebody who puts your what? Your logic up in your application, what happens in that environment? You don't need it necessarily in your database. And if you don't need your database, it shouldn't cost you anything. PIM, LDAP, we have plugins nowadays to work into modern enterprise authentication systems. Table functions. The thing about the information schema is what? It materializes all of its data. In our environment, we implemented table functions. We've been able to really quickly extend that. We now have new data dictionaries that are around table cache, around table definition cache. We can do things like show temporary tables. We have an all-new SQL-compliant information schema. Our information schema is just what is in the SQL standard. It is no more than that. It is in what is in the SQL standard. We have not modified it. We're sticking to the standard. That is all that will be inside our information schema. Because why implement it to do anything else? In the storage engine world, for nearly 2 years now, we have by default been a transactional database. It's one of the earliest changes I made. Why? Because for the most part, people want to know that when their database goes down and their database comes back up, that the data is going to be there, that there's not going to be any corruption in that data. So we switched to being an all-transactional database nearly 2 years ago, and we fixed all of our tests. When you type make test on Drizzle, you're seeing that run against a transactional engine. That took a lot of work. It takes a lot of work to actually switch the core over to actually think about and be transactional by default. There's no more table-level locking inside of our design whatsoever. We can't support even engines that do table-level locking anymore. Why? There's no use for a table-level locking engine anymore. Our database, we don't go anywhere near that. And our data dictionary is federated. What does that mean? If you have multiple storage engines internally, what that means is that we ask those storage engines for what exists in that storage engine. We don't have anything like an FRM file on disk. No corruption can occur in these cases. Why? You do not want the storage engine and for some file on disk to be out of sync with each other. That's an actual disaster. You don't want that sort of do. This whole needing no SQL, SQL, how about also SQL? There's no reason not to provide it. And notice, this is something that I find pretty fabulous about their engine. Notice that it brought back this JSON object that exists that could customer ID. They're actually doing internal joins already. They actually understand the relevance to data inside of their engine. So it's not like you have to do, they're basically pre-doing their joins at this point. Relational data should have been relational much more deeper than what we did necessarily. So while we can provide it in table operations, notice we can provide it also in a non-SQL environment thanks to their engine. So this is a pretty cool example of people making use today of Drizzle technology. Thanks.
Cool.
You've been listening to a presentation from the O'Reilly Media MySQL Conference.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Rob Lepper. Our website editor was Rachel Denny. The series producer is Sathyesh Chakravarthy.
This is Phil Windley. I hope you'll join me next time for more exciting presentations from the MySQL Conference.